Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Ted Santos, and I am your co-host of The Creative Alchemist. And we come to you every single Thursday, and we talk about the things that concern you most, especially when they deal with your business. We are the show that addresses business needs, your health, your mental health, and today we're going to do something very special. Before I introduce my guest, I'd like to introduce my co-host, Lori. Let them know you're here.
Hello, this is Lori Miller of LGC Interior Designs, and it's always a pleasure to be here. And I have to say, we have the most fascinating guest. And tonight, I think it's a subject that, you know, unfortunately no one wants to deal with and we all have to deal with. So let's introduce Charlotte. And Charlotte, please tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do, and this is going to be a hot topic.
Well, I thank Lori and Ted for having me on their show. This is a topic that kind of hit me some 16 years ago. I had a father-in-law with dementia, mother with Alzheimer's, and a dad with Parkinson's. All at the same time. So I the topic is parenting your parents 101.
Right. And that's a
tough one. You know, and it's interesting when people first hear, you know, how do you parent your parents? You know, all kinds of thoughts can run through your head, right? Your parent, like, why am I parenting my parents? Well, at some point, it sounds like Charlotte. From what you've seen, you're kind of going that way. You kind of reverse the roles. Your parents get older, whether it's dementia or they're just have gotten so old. You know, I have an aunt. She died at 101, like weeks from being 102. And when people get older, they need someone to care for them. And I think some people, our society has changed so much. You know, my grandfather actually grew up in a house with his parents, his grandparents, and his great-grandfather. So he spent time getting to know his great-grandfather really well. And people lived that way. That was normal. Now we have this, you know, every man for himself, and your parents get older and they are on their own. Some people put them in a nursing facility
there's retirement centers, there's assisted living, there's memory care. There's all kinds of different facilities. And as you said, 100 years ago, families, three generations lived together. They lived in the same house and you took care of them. And what I learned on that journey was, and because my father-in-law lived with us, that's all and well good, but in today, you know, it depends on, you know, how much extra help you have. And, you know, back then families were very large, so everyone could help each other.
Exactly.
I happen to have one sibling, and he lives in Alaska, 3,000 miles away, and he just said, good luck, sissy, you know. And
wow.
God love him, you know. I mean, he's my little brother, but. You know, I didn't have any help. My husband, you know, was great help. But we all know that women are the caregivers of the world. Women step up and do what they got to do. I even changed my mom's diapers or, you know, depends. That's not something a son wants to do for his mother. So, you know, women have to step up to do for that. And the nice thing is, I've noticed over the 16 years of this journey, and especially now with, you know, we've got this COVID, the adult children are now seeing that their parents are not going to be there forever. They're not going to be there for them. And that's been my passion for a long time is you've got to love your loved ones while they're here because you never know. Life is very fragile.
Right.
Correct.
Very much so.
Well, I unfortunately, I can tell you that I'm the oldest of four children, and both my parents passed away when I was 21. So, you know, you understand exactly what you said. Life is fragile, and your parents are not guaranteed. Well, I guess what I saw to be most amazing is I assumed, okay, you lose your parents all of a sudden, and that's rough. But then when you watch people who lose their parents when the parent is like 90, in their 90s, and it still has the same impact of, you know, there's a void in your life. Except what you want to talk about is when your parents do get older and you do have to change the depends and they can't get around the way they used to. And even just psychologically, you know, my grandfather passed away when he was 90, and he was always like this vibrant and energetic. And when he couldn't get around as well as he did before, he started to change a bit. So I'm assuming you, first, you've written a book, so I'd like you to tell people about the book. But there are a lot of things that you learned, and there's some insight that you'd like to share with people who are actually in the situation or will be headed for it. Like you said, none of us escape it. So if someone would like to call and ask Charlotte questions, the phone number here is 516-387-1640. That's 516-387-1640. So tell us about, you've been published and you've written some really good books. You've become an expert in this world of parenting your parents. So why don't we start from there, and then we can build on that.
Yeah. The interesting thing is I never thought of myself as a caregiver at the time. I just was the daughter doing what I thought I should do. Now, if you read my book, and my book is called You Have to Laugh to Keep from Crying, because that was one of the things I learned, was it's okay to cry. It's okay, but I tried never to cry or be upset in front of my parents, because the one thing, remember we talked about the role reversal? The one thing you have to learn is you know it's role reversal, but they never want to know it's role reversal.
Right.
You never argue with them. You never tell them they're wrong.
Right.
I mean, they're in total denial, and I guarantee you they all are. If there's not one out there that wants to admit, you know, that they're going down that road, they won't. You know, if my parents had their, you know, if they had their wishes, they would like to go to bed, die in their sleep. I would plan a funeral. I'd take them, you know, I'd bury them, and then I would mourn, and I'd go on with my life. Well, that is not the reality nowadays at all. I mean, many, many people are living longer and longer, and mainly because of medicine. You know, it's keeping people longer. We've got bionic parts. You know, I mean, who knows? And let me give you a statistic. 10-year-old children today, 50% of them will live to be at least 112.
Oh, God.
Wow.
Does that tell you that? Yeah. So, I mean, we're all going to live. I mean, it's just going to get longer and longer and longer stretches of life.
Wow.
What's that quality going to be?
Right.
Exactly.
Well, that's the concern. We all strive to live forever, but then what kind of quality of life do we have? You know?
Well,
and that's not.
Yeah. Let me share with you. My mom died at 93, 3 years ago, and she was the last of the three parents that passed. And I'd always known inside me I was going to write a book, but I believe I haven't mentioned, I think I told Ted earlier, I have 20 grandchildren. So I always thought I would write a children's book. Well, I'm in the process of writing it right now. But 6 weeks after my mother passed, God told me to write a book. And I literally looked up to heaven and I said, God, I said, I did not do well in English and you saw my grades. He says, oh, that's all right. We've got editors for that. You are a great storyteller, and you're going to do fabulous. Well, I got an email invited me to a writer's seminar. Okay, God, you don't send emails. But I went to this writer's seminar 11 months later, the book's in my hand, and the next year it was voted the best self-help book in the state of Texas. And they're calling me the voice of the caregivers. I'm on a new journey. I've recreated, you know, where I'm going. But my passion is seniors. I want people to value them. They are valuable.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you. Well, it's won about 5 other awards, and I won't even go into all those, but it's like, oh, my gosh. You know, and then, you know, it's just crazy. But what I want to share with people is when they're walking the caregiver journey, whether they decide to keep their loved one at home, and it could be their spouse. A lot of husbands are taking care of wives, or wives are taking care of husbands. And mm-hmm. I'm also a mentor, so I help some of them. And I have to share with them that there will be a point when you cannot do it by yourself. You right. cannot handle everything emotionally and physically. I myself, halfway through my journey, did not realize I was literally wearing myself out. And I have the world's greatest husband. My first husband died of cancer, and I've been married 30 years to my current husband, and he's the biggest support that I could ever have. But, you know, you emotionally, you can't, even though I cry and he'd hold me and, you know, I'd let some things out, I got cancer halfway through my journey. And I know that was from the stress. I know it was because I wasn't taking care of myself. I was taking care of everybody but me. And I want caregivers not to be selfish, but I want them to, you know, if they've got mom at home and one of their siblings or even a neighbor says, hey, why don't you go to the movie and I'll watch your mom for 2 hours? Go to the movie.
Right. Right.
If a neighbor wants to bring meals, let them bring in meals. You know, it's not a martyr syndrome. You know, we take care of our loved ones because we love them. You know, we want to cherish them. We want to hold them. But we want them to have, you know, the best that I can, care they can. My mom finally had to go into a facility, and I realized that, you know what? They were professionals, and they were taking care for dignity. And the best thing about that was I was the cheerleader. I could go have all the best of my mom. I could go visit her all day long, anytime I wanted to, and I didn't have to worry about, am I giving her the right meds? You know, am I doing the right thing for her?
Right,
you know,
right.
What do I need to do next? You know, so, and one of my comments is, you know, caregiving can be a joy, not a job. It is a joy. I would give anything in the world if I could go see my mom today. Now, with that being said, I would not want her to have gone through this COVID where you couldn't go visit. Because she had Alzheimer's and she wouldn't understand. I'm going to share a little story with you. One of the things that Alzheimer does is it takes away their short-term memory. They keep that long-term memory, but the short-term memory starts to go. In other words, a simple test you can do is have 5 simple words like a tree, a flower, a desk, a chair, and ask them to repeat those words back to you, and they can't. They can't remember those 5 words. Well, my mom, I could tell as I watched my mom walk the Alzheimer path. And I'll share a bit about my dad in a minute, but as I watched her, you know, walk that journey, I could tell where she was at in her life. And shortly before she died, and as I said, she had Alzheimer's for almost 16 years, she was in her teens. I could tell by the stories that she would share. And that's the other thing. Oh, my gosh, ask them to share their stories. I guarantee you, you will hear things you've never heard before.
Mm-hmm.
And just listen with love. And even if you know the story's a little askew of what you'd heard it before, it doesn't matter. Let them share their memories. It gives them pride, and it shows your love for them. And I said a minute ago, and I'm going to stress this, never, never, never argue with them. Never tell them they're wrong, even though you may know. You can, I hate to use the word placate. I have a Dallas County judge who's a very good friend of mine, and her parents lived in Florida. Now, she's recently lost her mother, but she used to drive, and y'all will appreciate this. She would drive from Texas, pick up her parents in Florida. Dad would be in the back seat. Mom was in the front. And then she would drive to New York for her grandmother's 100th birthday party. And on the way, she knew I was writing this book, and it was in manuscript. It wasn't in print yet. And I said, Anna, you need to come read it before you go. I get a phone call 1 hour into the trip. Charlotte, my dad is driving me nuts. He's in the back seat. He's telling me I turned the wrong way. I've gone down the wrong road. And I said, Anna, what did you say to your dad? And I said, Dad, you're wrong. I said, duh, you're wrong, Anna. Never tell your dad wrong. Huh. I said, next time he says that, here's what I want you to say to him. I want you to say, Dad, you're right. I did go down the wrong road. But you know what?
Right.
There's this really neat place down the road that we can have lunch. Isn't it a beautiful scenery? You get them off of it. You find another path so that they're not knowing that. Because they know that something's going on, but they don't need to be reminded and have it pounded into their head.
Right. Okay. And so I guess if you argue with them, that does that trigger them and bring up all kinds of other things?
It will make them
more upset than normal?
Yes, it will make them confused, and it will make them angry at you, and then you get angry, and it becomes a vicious circle that you don't want to go down
right.
that road. You know,
right.
And they have no way out. And they have no way out. You're right. You could walk out of, the building, but they have no way out, and you're still going to carry that guilt. Oh, why did I do that?
Right.
Now, I was telling my dad had Parkinson, and he was lucid till 2 days before he died. Now, his health was not real well because Parkinson starts shutting down your throat, but it doesn't affect your memory. Now, you do have a little bit of paranoia with it, and sometimes it can be very extensive where they will see people. And my dad had, I hate to call it, but he had come to Jesus meetings at the end of his bed every night for about 3 months before he passed. And I didn't know, we didn't know when he was going to pass until like 72 hours. And they called me and they said, your dad's going into a coma. And they said, there's nothing we can do. And they both had DNRs. That's another thing. While people still have their conscience, they need to figure out, and I think Ted, you and I talked about this earlier, they need to figure out who's going to be the executor of the will. Don't make it a joint, because I guarantee you kids are not going to agree. I don't care if they're the best family in the world. You got to have one person that's in charge of the medical, and it can be a different person in charge of the financial if you want to do that. But if they can do it while they're still, in a state of mind, and they can figure out who wants to be their medical power of attorney and who can be their power of attorney, they need to do that while they know who they want, to take care. Otherwise, every state kind of has their own laws, and we in Texas, the state will take over and decide.
Right.
And I don't think any of us want that to happen.
No, nobody wants that.
Right. I heard you say that you received a calling from God to write this book. When you wrote it, or whether it was before, during, or after, what was the intention? What did you want people to get out of the book?
The bottom line was I went to Barnes & Noble's. I went everywhere trying to find information. I asked Barnes & Noble, I said, what do you have on parenting your parents? What do you have on, Alzheimer's and Parkinson and dementia? They sent me to medical books that were written by doctors. And I want you to know, I sat down there and I read a chapter or two out of several books. And I went, this is no help to me. So at that point, God was walking me down this journey and down this road so that I would write a book that lay people can read. They will understand. They will relate to. When I speak, oh, my gosh, it's just amazing. People come up to me, you shared my story. And my book is written with love. You have to love unconditionally. Respect. You have to respect them for who, what, and where they are. Patience. You have to have patience with them and with yourself. And forgiveness. Oh, my gosh, forgiveness is big. Because forgiveness could be something that happened 20 years ago and you don't even remember what it was. but somebody's right, holding right. a grudge. So my book is written with all of that.
Okay. All right. So a big part of it was all the books that dealt with the topic were very technical. They were more medical books. They were in a medical language. And even though you could read them, it was like, you know, it was a labor, you know, laborious to be able to read them. So you wrote something for the average person, and this is common, like almost no one escapes this, right?
Everyone has it. Like you say, whether it's an aunt or your spouse or your parents
right.
or your grandparents or a sibling. You know, I even have people that take care of their friends. So it
okay.
does not escape anyone, whether they think they're going to avoid it or not. Now, my brother in Alaska,
okay.
I guess he's going to avoid it, although his wife died of leukemia. So he's already been a caregiver.
Interesting.
So, you know, everyone's going to be a caregiver at some time or another. In fact, I believe all mothers are the ultimate, you know, caregivers. But, and everyone's going to walk this your parents. My book, I probably should have just had You Have to Laugh to Keep from Crying, you know, Caring for the Caregiver, because it's not just parents. It's, you know, your loved one. I have wives call me all the time and ask me. I can't tell them, you know, it's time, but I give them signs that they need to look for, you know, when they say they know they're going to have to put him in a facility. The blessing
right.
is 16 years ago when I walked this journey, or actually it's been longer than that, but when I started this journey, there were not the numbers of facilities out there as there are now, and there wasn't the help. There are, you know, Find a Place for Mom, Angel Care, and I'm not advertising for any of them. I'm just saying there are thousands and thousands of ways you can get help. They can come into your home if you've got, you know, you're able and your home is accessible. You know, if they have to have walkers or wheelchairs or whatever, you know, they can come into your home and they can do as little as clean house and bathe your mom or our dad, or they can do all of it. They can do, you know, 24/7. So there's so much out there right now. It's amazing to me. I'm on several different boards and several different associations. How many, there's nurse advocates. I have a good friend who just started a company. And what she does is she only hires RNs to work for her. And if you have, you know, both the wife and or the daughter and say son-in-law have full-time jobs, she takes mom or dad to the doctor. She can talk to mm-hmm. the doctor about the meds. And if the doctor says, well, we're going to put her on this med, and she's being an RN, she knows that she's taking, and well, did you notice she's taking so-and-so? Those will not mix real well. And sometimes, you know, they go to so many different doctors that they don't pay attention to what another doctor.
And they don't communicate with each other.
Right,
oh,
right.
No. They, you know, you'd like them to in a real world, but they don't. So, you know, that's
right.
that's a really big need right now, and I see it popping up, you know, all over the place. And there's just tremendous. But the interesting thing and the blessing to me is all of these caregivers, they look at me because – even though there's RNs out there and there's nurses and their facilities, I've walked the walk. I can literally empathize with them. I've looked in my mother's eyes when she didn't know who I was. I've, you know, listened to my dad tell me about, you know, people that have passed standing at the end of his bed. And nobody's got, I'm going to be honest with you, I don't think anyone's got an original story. Because we've all seen it all, that you,
right.
you know, people
right.
that, you know.
So the first thing that you're, it sounds like you're saying is when you're healthy as a parent, or if you know you have leukemia or whatever the ailment is, get your things in order. Make sure you have someone who's going to, you know, a power of attorney for your finances. You have an executor of your estate. Have all that in order, sit down and speak to people so you can, like, lead that process while you're in a great state of mind. That's the number one thing. Correct?
Yes, that would definitely. I've already done it all. I mean, I even have picked the songs for my funeral.
Interesting. Wow.
But I'm just saying, you don't want to leave things that, if you want it done your way, and a lot of us do, pick them. And if you want to sit down with your kids and say, hey, this is kind of what I want, I'm going to put it down on paper, chat with them. And the other is medical. You can have a separate medical power of attorney that can be given to a non-family member if you want to.
Okay.
That's a really good idea, too.
And that's not the executor, that's not the power of attorney. That is a medical power of attorney. It's totally different.
Mm-hmm. Well, right.
And a DNR. My parents had done a DNR, do not resuscitate, a long time ago. They'd verbally told me. So I had to make a point of when, they would go into the hospital or when they, the DNR papers were there. And some of the times they were in, there's this big DNR that's on the door sill of their door, so that everybody that would go in and maybe catch them having a heart attack or whatever, would know we're not supposed to resuscitate this person. Because
right.
A lot of times, and that has to be a personal thing. That is, that is not something I'm advocating. I'm just saying my parents have told me that forever.
Okay.
And right.
Some people want to be cremated. Some people want, like you said, certain songs. But you should know that you should have these conversations with your loved ones in advance.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. And everyone will be a lot happier.
So I want to get to what you were dealing with in your professional life. Before we get there, what other things should people look at aside from, getting your things in order, power of attorney, executor of the estate, anything else like a do not resuscitate, I want to be cremated, I want to call, what are some of the other things that people kind of overlook and they are important?
Well, here's an interesting thing. I told you I have 20 grandchildren. I have 5 children and 20 grandchildren. And the new generation are kind of minimalistic. So I have a lot of stuff. We'll just call it stuff. But as one of my grandkids looks at something, they say, oh, me, Mom, that is so neat. I said, do you want it when I'm gone? I'm literally putting name on the bottom of things so that when I'm gone, that grandchild will get that.
Okay.
And I heard a really neat story, and I'm going to share it. It's there was these 3 sisters who lost their loved ones early on. And one sister, we'll say she lived in New York, and 2 lived in Florida. Well, and the 2 sisters live in Florida. One of them came down with terminal cancer, and she decided she wanted to have her things go to people that wanted them. She wanted people to remember her by her, things that they loved or admired when they were in her house. Well, the sister that lived with her said, I don't want any part of this. So she kind of went away. The sister from Texas came out, and she said, I want you to go to the store, and I want you to get some party stuff. And while she was gone, she laid out all of her things in her living room and around and all, and she made phone calls to all of her friends. And she said, I want y'all to come. We're having a party tonight. So when they all showed up, there was drinks and cookies and whatever. And she said, the reason I've invited y'all here is because you've admired this plant, or you've admired this lamp, or you've admired, I want you to take it home with you. Because when you turn on that lamp, you'll remember me. Or when you water that plant, you'll remember me. Because nobody else wants my stuff, and I don't want it, thrown away.
Okay.
I thought that
very
was
smart move.
Really neat story. I just thought it was
right,
really
absolutely.
Neat.
In New York, Lori, you can confirm or deny I think they have programs where if one of your family members wants to be your caregiver, the state will pay for it. But they train you on what to do. So this way you don't have, they say you don't have a stranger coming in. It's someone you really love, and you'll be compensated for being the caregiver. Do you have that in Texas?
Yes, we do. I don't know all the rules on it, but they will pay if you keep a loved one in the house, you know, say a mother or father or whatever in the house, they do pay. I do not know the laws or the rules. You know, I don't know the particular on it. So let's just say for the quality of our listeners is check with your state because, you know, that is allowed in a lot of states that they get compensated for, you know, giving up their job and being the caregiver.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't know if it's just with specific insurances or how that works. I've heard that. But honestly, because I know we were going through that with my dad, but I'm not really, I'm not really sure.
So. Yeah, well, and if you call Social Security or the, you know, some of them will be able to tell you a little bit because I think it comes from the Medicare or the, you know, the Social Security. Somewhere in that it's all tied together.
Okay. Yeah. Something like that. For sure.
Yeah. And that's something I probably ought to research. You know, there's so many different topics that I, you know, could learn about. There are people down here that realtors that only specialize in helping an elderly downsize if they're going into a facility. So that they just specialize with just seniors and with a lot of compassion. And I think that's, like I said, there are so many beautiful, beautiful people that are stepping up to their game. When I speak to social workers and all, I always, and nurses and RNs and different types, I always tell them, I said, I feel like I'm speaking to the choir because you're in this for the job. You're in this because you're compassionate. You're in this because you probably have your own backstory that led you into this path because you're not in it for the money.
No.
Right. Right.
You know, and that's the truth. Only the good. I mean, I'm not saying occasionally someone's in there and then they go, "Oh, this is not for me." But for the most part, they're all beautiful, beautiful, compassionate, loving, you know, caring people. I've just met thousands and thousands in the industry that take care of our seniors that are just fabulous people. And I know they're all over, you know. I mean, they're everywhere. You know, the sad part is people like you and I and, you know, many of the social workers and all, we don't make the news. It's only the bad stuff that makes the news. And that's sad.
Exactly.
That's sad. But there's more good people than there are bad. That's my stand on it, and I'm going to stick to it.
Okay.
Right.
So,
no,
Charlotte,
this is,
go ahead, Lori.
Go for it, Ted. Again.
Okay. So, Charlotte, you were working when you were juggling parenting your parents or an in-law. So what were you doing, and how did you manage that?
Well, it was interesting. I had probably the ideal job. I was an event planner for a large corporation. And that meant I partied all the time. All the executives, you know, whenever they had an event, you know, they'd go, okay, go set this up. So I'd get to sit in big hotels in the chef's table in the kitchen and taste all of his cuisine. And figure out, you know, what they were going to serve at that dinner. I had an ideal job, and I loved it. I really loved it. But when I found out, within 6 weeks of each other, my father-in-law had dementia, my mother was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, my dad with Parkinson's, and my parents lived 2 hours away. They lived in East Texas in their house on 2 acres. And, you know, I'm going, please move up near me, you know, and they would not. they would not. I mean, I was like beating my head against the wall. And luckily enough, my mother's baby sister, my mother was the oldest of four girls, and the baby was 17 years younger than her and only 7 years older than me. She lived 15 minutes from my parents. So she became my eyes and ears on my parents. And when something would happen, you know, I had the power of attorney, I had the medical power, you know, she would call me. And I would, you know, take off from work. And I'd take off from work again. And I'd take off from work again. And finally, I, you know, my boss said, you can't do this anymore. You know, and, and I literally had to retire 10 years earlier than I wished to. And I'm glad I did, in a way, because I was able to spend more time and study and get involved. As a matter of fact, back then, I joined an Alzheimer's group thinking, you know, I'm going to learn a lot from them. I ended up running the group and teaching them, you know, because I was doing my research. And, you know, we all, the big support you get from a group like that is everyone gets to share their stories. They finally have someone they can talk to. So that's a biggie. But the what do you do, you know, what do I do next, you know, I had to come up with those answers. So I had to get outside of my little Alzheimer group and join other associations and all. But anyway, I loved my job, and I tried to, you know, kind of reinvent myself. I did start taking notes. I would even record my mom when she would share some of her stories. And it was a blessing to me to, you know, she would share things. Like I said, she was going back in her life. So she was sharing things that happened in high school and, you know, with mom and dad. And I didn't even know that my parent, my grandparents settled Engelberg, Arkansas, and the church there is where my grandfather built, you know. So, I mean, you'll learn things, and take a recorder because you will be amazed and you won't remember everything.
Right.
You know, that's a really good trick, is if you can, you know, record it and take pictures. Take videos. And as a matter of fact, one of my girlfriends was a photographer. And after I finally, and through a long series of things, my mom, finally I got her up close to me, but she had so many issues. I put her in a facility like 15 minutes from me. My girlfriend, the photographer, said, let's go to the home and take pictures of you and your mom together. Now, I thought, this is neat. These will be good memories for me. And that's the other thing, is creating memories is so essential, because that's what we all live on, is those memories. But I didn't realize God had another plan, because the hands on the cover of my book are me holding my mother's hands. I didn't know they were going to be the cover of a book. There's many pictures with even my mom that are in my book that I wouldn't have had she not done that.
Right.
So never leave anything to happenstance, because, you know, God's got a plan. You know, he's got a
God
plan.
Does.
He's just going, you know, and he's just going forward, and I just go, yes, well, what's next? You know.
Right. You have to listen.
Yeah.
You just have to listen, because he does. So you've been through, I guess, you know, several careers, right? From what I'm hearing you speak, you were an event planner, and then you were a caretaker, and now you're an author. And, you know, I mean, you're just like a take charge kind of woman.
I'm
going to
try
to do, and I'm going to excel.
Yeah, well, I'm a type A.
Nothing.
Yeah, I've got about seven books that I'm part of. It just, it's crazy. I've got a radio program that I do with Indie Beacon Radio here in Texas, and but when I say I'm in Texas, but we interview people all over the world who are part of Authors Marketing Guilds or want to be interviewed. If they just have a book, or are they writing a book? You know, I would love to interview them. And I'm having the time of my life. And the neatest thing is I can do it right here from my office, in my house.
Right. Well, I think that's one of the things that I love, too, is just you get to meet so many fabulous people, and you're, like, sitting at home.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. And it's so much fun. And everyone is so different. Yeah, everyone is so different. I interviewed a lady last Tuesday, and she's 54 years old. Her name is Judy Lowe. I called her J-Lo. Think about it. She's J-Lo on the call. And she had written 5 children's books, and they've been translated into Spanish, and she's won awards for that. And now a couple of them are being produced in French. And it was just so fascinating because she has no children of her own. Her husband died a long time ago. Now, wait a minute. You want to hear a funny? As we're talking on the interview, her husband taught at my high school.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, wow.
Now, what a small world is it?
You just gave me goosebumps.
Huh?
You just gave me goosebumps.
I mean, I get this all the time. You know, somebody knows somebody that I've talked to, or, you know, and I'm going, oh, my gosh. I went and got my annual and looked him up, and sure enough, there he was, you know, in my annual. But anyway, it's just so interesting. I interviewed a 24-year-old who wrote a book called Dumb Politics, and we won't go into that. But, oh, my gosh, he was so fascinating. So fascinating. In fact, my husband is a historian. And I said, you're going to want to sit in on this one. Just sit in the corner and be quiet. But you're going to want to sit in on this one. And, oh, this kid was just unbelievable. I realized there is hope for the world.
Right.
And so did your husband sit in?
Yes, he did.
Okay. Go ahead, Lori.
I get the whole, oh, my God, I have to do this, and you know, you get the message and you're just guided and you're doing what you're supposed to be doing and kind of things follow suit when you're on your path. Obviously our podcast is for entrepreneurs and starting your own business and doing what you love. So some people bang their heads over and over and over again, trying to get their dream to succeed, right? To get to that other side. You've managed to do it kind of seamlessly and pretty flawlessly, right? It's like, oh, I have to write a book. I don't know how to write a book, and here's this, you know, manual in front of you. What would you, or what message can you relate to our audience to say, how do you, you know, get on top of that book club? How do you get to be the person who's running the group and not just in the group? Like, what do you,
well,
what
let me
qualities do you think?
Well, let me share something with you, and this is amazing that you're asking this. For every time I get a yes, I get 9 no's. So you just got to, keep plugging. And with that being said, every time I go somewhere or go to a convention or go, you know, even if I'm the speaker, I make a point of being there early and greeting everyone I can, you know, that's coming in the door. I want to know everyone. Well, I went to a seminar and I was speaking one of the 2 days, but it was later in the second day, but I made around the room and got to meet everyone. Long story short, one of the ladies in the room asked me to be part of a book that's coming out in November. It's called Sparks. And I've written a chapter on staying on top of your game. What do you do to stay on top of your game? Ignite yourself to success. And I realized, you know, and she's from Indiana, and it was like, oh, my gosh, I'm now part of, you know, something that's going to be, you know, I think it's going to be really big. I'm working on other things. I'm working with another doctor. You just got to try them, you know, and get out there. And like I said, you make 10 phone calls and you might get 9 no's, but you're going to get a yes occasionally. You know, you're going to – I'm going to share something funny with you, and you both will appreciate this, but I figure what you dwell on, you're going to go towards. I've been thinking about writing a book for a long, long time. I thought it was going to be a children's book, and eventually it is because I'm working on it now. But I've written a garden book. And with that being said, when I had cancer, when I came out of it, my view of being a caregiver kind of twisted a little, because that's when I realized, oh my gosh, I got to care for myself. Well, what can I do to care for myself? So I became a Texas Superstar Master Gardener. Now, I didn't just become a Master Gardener. I decided to go to, y'all mentioned San Antonio. I went to San Antonio for 3 days and became a Texas Superstar Master Gardener. So that puts me on, you know, a step. There's maybe 1/10 of us, you know, compared to all the Master Gardeners in the state. And now I'm one of their top speakers. And the fun thing during COVID, oh my gosh, I've gotten to many of the facilities who do Zoom. They've had me come in and I put on my coveralls and I get out in my garden room and I teach them how they can garden in containers, you know, on their patios.
That's
great. You know, and so, I mean, just keep reinventing yourself. I don't know if you've ever heard of an indigo child, but we keep reinventing ourselves. You know, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you conquer something and then you go on to something, you know, something else. I don't know where I'm going to, and I'm 75 years old. I don't know if I mentioned that. I'm just having the time of my life. It's, you know, it's
so
just amazing.
So let me ask you, that's pretty important. You're 75 and you use the word conquer, and you tell me if it's the same appropriate word, but you'll master something and then you'll master something else, and the things you master have given you access to a spotlight, for lack of better words, right? So it's allowed you to engage different types of people and even make a living from it. But there are some skills, competencies. People talk about passions, but it just sounds like there's this commitment to accomplish something, and you not only accomplish it, you master it, and then you do something else. Am I speaking your language?
Yeah, I don't consider myself really a master. It's just I know that if I keep learning things and I keep growing, I'll share this with you. I don't even think I've mentioned this, but during COVID, I'm a seamstress. I have 2 sewing machines, and I used to sew for all of my grandparents. I made over 700 masks that I mailed to senior centers and to seniors and to, you know, I mailed them to over 10 states of people I knew, just to say, I can't hug you now, but here's a mask. You know, maybe you can use it if you can't give it to someone. And it was just something I could do. It was a talent that God gave me. And so I could. And so I still do. I still get people go, hey, can you put some fish on a mask, because my uncle fishes and he's fishing. You know, I mean, it's funny little things like that. I don't ever consider myself a master, except I am a type A. So if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. Now, with that being said, let me add something here. One of the books that a doctor and I are writing right now is The Guilt Syndrome. And it's kind of hard to write because we all have guilt in all different fashions. And a lot of people whose parents died, they feel guilty they didn't do enough. And what I try to impact and push upon them and hug them and share with them is whatever you did that day, you did the best you could on that day. And you get up again and you tackle that problem again, because it's not going away, and you just do a little different. You know, you just try to do a little better the next time you do it. And with you saying me being a master, I just want to know, I know a little bit about everything. I'm probably not a master of anything, but I I want to know what it's all about. You know, when someone starts talking about this, and my husband, he's amazed that I've become a techie. I am not a techie. I am lucky. I have a 24-year-old grandson who is my techie. But I've learned what I had to learn. And y'all have too.
Right.
You know, from your house, you have to learn to do, you know, do it and, you know, broadcast your radio program out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to do that. I know how to do a Zoom.
Right.
You know, but, you know, y'all are now
exactly.
broadcasting this out all, everywhere. And it's, you know, it's fabulous. You know, and it's amazing. I think I broadcast this on IAOTP, the International Association of Top Professionals. And I've gotten several of them that I know are listening because they emailed me back and said, oh,
that's
this is going to be cool. You know, this is going to be
great.
You know, so, you know, you just, and I love to help, you know, if I could help y'all's program and, you know, it all goes, what goes around comes around, I always say, you know, if it comes, you know, if it doesn't come back to me, that's fine, but it usually does.
Right.
You know, it's just, you know, but it's exciting. I'm excited right now, even though we've gone through this COVID and everyone's locked down and everyone's, you know, depressed. I'll share something else with you. Like I said, I'm just a little bitty person. I'm 5 foot tall. But that is pretty little. But my grandson, I told you, is 24. He is very, very smart, but he has Asperger's. And Asperger's is a milder case of, I just went brain dead. Anyway, the disease where...
Down, it's a milder case of Down syndrome or no?
No, it's... I can't believe I just forgot. But anyway, he has Asperger's, and anyone that knows... will know what that is. They're not real good with social skills, and they don't like big crowds. And it's kind of what there was a movie with Dustin Hoffman. He had the disease.
I know. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Well, anyway, my grandson has
it. Right.
And he scored in the top 100 in the nation in STEM, which is science, technology, engineering, and mathematics.
Wow.
Smart as a whip. Harvard wanted him. Well, no, we're not going to send him off to Harvard. You know, he did go to a small college, but he couldn't handle the social skills. You know, but he's doing so well now. And he's just got a menial job. He goes and does labor work, but he has two little companies he's building himself. One is doing computer tech work, and he's got several of us little old ladies. He comes and, you know, helps us with her, and he can, you know, team view. He can, you know, get on and help you with your computer. But one other thing is his parents bought him a 3D printer. Now, we know this is the new technology.
Awesome.
And I don't even know what technology's out there, but 3D printers. So I asked him, or actually he called me when he first got his first 3D printer. Now he has two. And he said, me, Mom, and that's what my grandbabies call me, what can I print? What can I make for you for your business? And I said, you know what, with this COVID starting, I said, I want you to make me a coin with a guardian angel on one side. And we're going to put Psalms 91:11 on the other. May God's angel wings surround you. And so he made me a couple of hundred of these coins. And I call them my hugs. So now when I see someone, or even I mail them to people, I send them a hug because I can't hug them during COVID. Mm-hmm. So he's able to do something. And he's also able, you know, to help me. And I can put a smile on somebody's face. That's all I'd want is a smile on someone's face. That's my biggest reward is, you know, seeing people smile. And that's why I want adult children to smile with their parents again. You know, show them the love and respect that they deserve. You know, like you said, we live in a different world, you know, because, you know, you, like I say, y'all live, I think, in New York, and I live in Texas. Families live that far apart. I have a brother in Alaska. You know, they don't live
right.
together anymore. They don't live three generations in a house, you know, like
right.
they used
right.
to. But COVID is showing a lot of these adult children that, oh, my gosh, mom or dad are not going to always be there for me.
Right.
You know, they, so I want them to create memories. You know, I think this
right.
is, this has been an eye opener. Let's just put it that way.
Yes. With,
definitely
with
an
COVID,
eye opener.
That is creating. Yep. It's creating something. So if someone wanted a copy of your book, or if they wanted to consult you, for your experience around parenting your parents, how would they get a hold of you?
Well, I can give you, they can go to charlottecanyonspeaks.now.site, or they can go to howtoparentyourparents.net, or if they want to speak to me personally or get a hand autographed book, they can go to Amazon. I have it out there, but they can contact me at charlotte@charlottecanyon, and that's canion.com, and that's my email address, and they can contact me personally.
Do you have any final words of wisdom for our audience?
Well, the one thing I always love to share with people is once your loved ones are gone, all you're going to have are those memories. So create them now while they're alive. Doesn't
right.
matter how young your parents are, you know, life is fragile. So create those memories, and you will be the one that'll have the treasures.
So true.
That's well said.
Charlotte, thank you for being our guest. You've been amazing.
Well, thank you all for inviting me.
No, it's been
yes,
our pleasure.
An absolute pleasure.
Very insightful. Love your energy. This was great. We love that you share. I mean, this is such an intimate conversation, and it's, I think, one that everyone needs to have at some point, and we probably don't have it enough. No one wants to deal with, you know, death, especially of people we care about. So.
Right.
You know, your insight and your experiences are very valuable. So thanks for sharing them.
No, thank you. Lisa and Ted, it has been a pleasure. And I y'all are now friends of my soul. And if you will email me y'all's addresses, I'm going to send you one of my angel coins.
Oh,
okay, thank you.
Funny. Yes, definitely will. Thank you.
All right.
You and I will share with you my story privately, but that's very cool. Thank you so much.
Well, God bless.
You too.
You want to take
bye,
us out,
everyone. And and we'll see everyone next week.
You got it. Take care. Have a good evening, everyone. Take care. Thanks for joining us.
Have a great
us.
Night.
Bye.
Thank you very much. Bye, everyone.